Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
And we're here with you on NBRFM. I'm Sal Giangrasso, your host, and our guest is Tina Stromstead. Tina is the owner at Soul's Body in San Francisco, California. And let's start out by saying hello to Tina. Hi.
Hi. Thanks, Sal. Good to talk to you again.
Good to see you, too. And today we're going to be discussing a number of different topics. But as I always like to do, Tina, I like to start out by you giving out your website information so that this way everybody knows where they could find you on the Internet.
Thanks so much. It's my name, TinaStromstead.com. So that's spelled TinaStromstead.com.
Excellent, Tina. And if you would, if you could start out by giving everybody an idea of some of the things that have been under discussion, so this way they'll have a better understanding from the beginning how everything is going to be tying together. Is that okay?
Sure. Well, you're talking to me in San Francisco, and I know I'm talking to you in New York, and I just want to say first and foremost that I'm so sorry about these intense weather patterns, and I'm thinking about you and people in the Midwest and other areas who are dealing with that. Here right now, it's fine.
right.
The kind of work that I do is an integration. So I'm a psychotherapist, which means that I work with people in talk therapy or verbal psychotherapy, reviewing things that are that they're struggling with. You know, most people come in when they're feeling stuck or really upset or depressed, anxious, dealing with trauma, trying to explore what they want to do by way of a relationship they're in or a job they're in, if they're in the right vocation, things that are happening in their family. So this is the stuff of healing work in psychotherapy. And what I do that's a little bit different, in addition to listening a lot and talking with people to try to help them gain a better understanding of how things in the present are affecting them and how they may also be affected by patterns that developed in their past, to try to help them gain more understanding and to unwind some of those. I work a lot with the body. So I'm a Jungian psychoanalyst, which means that I draw from some of the work of Carl Jung, a Swiss psychiatrist, who worked many years ago in Switzerland and has a whole school of psychotherapy that works with the deep unconscious. So he came up with words like extroversion, introversion, superiority complex, inferiority complex, the foundation of the Myers-Briggs personality survey, which helps people get a sense of right fit in the work that they're in and can actually help in relationships. And he worked deeply with dreams and with what he called the collective unconscious. I'm also a dance movement therapist and a somatics educator. So I train psychotherapists in a PhD program in Santa Barbara. And I work in different countries with people from different cultures, where I learn a lot about their experience of the body, psyche, soul connection. We can talk about our issues, but often what we know already is somewhat limited, and the body holds a lot of memory. It holds our most profound connection to the unconscious, what is not yet formed in words, that may come out with a kind of honesty or simplicity or passion or what have you, through movement or through the way our breathing is affected by how we're feeling or by the way we hold ourselves in our body or the way we pull back from contact or move in. So I work in lots of different ways, including with dreams and with what the body is trying to say at a deeper level about what the person is struggling with, but also some of the unlived potentials, the new life that's trying to come forward into awareness and be lived more fully by the person.
Well, thank you for that overview, Tina. Now, the last time I had a chance to speak with you, about a week ago, you were discussing the concept of embodied alchemy. Mm-hmm. And would you please get us up to date on that and fill out that part of your discussion?
Sure. Embodied alchemy is something that I've been developing that's based on alchemy, which is a really ancient cross-cultural map of the transformational process. So it's something that, as far as we know, developed in Egypt, in that amazing civilization, you know, long, long before Christ, before the Common Era, and moved from the Egyptian area, you know, into India and China, and with the Moors over into Europe, and had its heyday during the medieval and Renaissance period. There's a lot that I could say about it. There's a common idea about it that alchemists were trying to turn lead to gold. And I don't know, as I said last week, that anyone has actually created gold in that way. Gold is its own substance, you know, that we find in the planet. But I think what they were trying to do was to discover a kind of inner gold, that is, to transform themselves. Many of the alchemists started out as would-be scientists and became mystics. They developed a kind of spiritual connection to the universe, to themselves, to one another. Literally, what you have are ancient paintings of alchemists cooking substances in a vessel over a flame that they would adjust over time so that it was neither too hot nor too cold. And as they were working with the vessel, they had to really focus and meditate, if you will, on the substance so that they were attuned to it, and they were helping the creative process, let's say. And over time, the substances shifted in the vessel. And this is an early precursor to modern-day chemistry, homeopathy, modern medicine, herbal medicine. A lot of our current medicines came out of these early experiments. And a way that we can liken it to the process of change in psychotherapy, which is my primary interest in it, in addition to giving credit to the history, is that in psychotherapy, we also create a sacred vessel together, a safe place where people can come out of their daily schedules and the hurly-burly of daily life, and be quiet and share what's going on with them and feel the sensations in their bodies, which they may not tend to do as often. They may not get quiet enough to do that. Or begin to remember their dreams. And there is, over time, the possibility of deep healing and of transformation, meaning the person makes substantial shifts that affect the way they think, their belief system, their openness to using the guidance of their emotions and of their inner imagery. So that's an alchemical process, and the stuff in the bottom of the alchemist's flask, they would call prima materia, the primal matter, whether it was lead or mud or, you know, something they consider to be kind of yucky in the beginning, that over time would be transformed to gold, to something of highest value. And that's also true in psychotherapy. We often bring in the thing that we least value or that we're most ashamed of or most troubled by. And over time, we see how the things, the feelings, the memories, the inner images that are trying to become more conscious in us can help us to become more whole if we don't continue to push them down, if we welcome them in a safe context and realize that this, too, is a part of me. It takes a lot of energy to push things down, to deny them, to dissociate from them, to project them onto somebody else, but to own them, to begin to get interested in what's inside of us in a safe way, is a very powerful process. And I think that's the stuff of alchemy. It also affects the body. So you might come in, I might come in, someone might come in feeling quite rigid, frightened, holding the body stiffly like wood or metal, having to be a little soldier to get through life as a child, to pull up their bootstraps. And they might move from that to more warmth, opening up to their feelings, which the alchemists called calcinatio, the kind of heating up or cooking and kind of burning away of the old artificial structures or sense of self. And then they might begin to soften. The body itself might soften and begin to surrender. The muscles might not hold so rigidly. And we call that solutio, a liquefying, a washing, a moistening. And in the dreams, you might see that reflected from the shift in ice, you know, icy landscapes, to a kind of thaw where winter begins to turn to spring. And there are streams that begin to flow, connecting parts of the body, connecting the person to feeling, to memory, to different kinds of things, gradually, over time, in a way that can be tolerated and embraced and integrated. So that's a lot to say,
right.
But that's a bit of a description and background.
You know, Tina, if I just might chime in here.
Sure, please.
It makes perfect sense, really, because I'm only familiar with the term alchemy when it comes to metallurgy, right? Turning lead into gold. But what
that's
you're talking
right.
about is turning, in effect, the lead of your life into the gold of your life. And to having this flow, you're talking about like the flow of a washing away, this flow of emotions that are being stifled to let loose with those and to go on to your next stages. Am I halfway on plane?
That is really beautiful. It's beautiful, Sal. And sometimes people are afraid of letting loose with their emotions because they've been pushed down for so long, or when they were, you know, angry as a child and they wanted to protest something, maybe in a healthy way because of something that was painful or felt unfair. If their parent or a teacher or, you know, an authority figure of any kind was frightened by anger because their parents were rageful, let's say, you know, somebody was drinking and would explode in rage because, you know, they weren't really connected to themselves if they were drinking or taking drugs or just hadn't gotten accustomed to their own anger. That would get stuffed into the body. And as it starts to come up, people can get scared and think, oh my God, am I going to be just like my dad or my mother? Am I a rageaholic? You know, but in fact, no. Here's the titration of the alchemical process. You can begin to get a sense that, you know, you're shredding the Kleenex in the therapy hour while you're talking, or you're kicking a little bit with your foot, or flipping your foot, or scratching your knee, or doing things that you're maybe not even aware of. And if the therapist very respectfully can ask permission to call attention to what the body might be trying to express to help, then you can get in touch with it as a little bit of irritation before it has to explode and make you feel out of control. Same thing with sadness, you know, same thing with shame, same thing with joy. A lot of people repress their joy or their pleasure. They feel guilty about having it if someone else they're close to is suffering, or there's suffering in the world. Or they may just not know how to embrace a sense of pleasure, of eros, of more love. They may be more afraid of that, or of intimacy, even with themselves, even with just feeling a sense of delight, and then being able to begin to offer that in a more open-hearted way in a relationship with another.
Tina Stromstedt is our guest, owner at Soul's Body in San Francisco, and her web address is authenticmovement-bodysoul.com. And Tina was also a trainer in the leadership training program in the Marion Woodman Foundation. And when we come back from the break here, Tina, I'd like you to discuss Marion Woodman, who she was and or who he was, and we'll get into that part of our discussion after this break, okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Sounds good.
And we'll be back with more right after this.
Every business needs professionals they can trust. Let it be your lawyer, accountant, electrician. Even the company plumber are all people you can trust. So why are you settling for your printer vendor? They never respond to your questions, and when they do, it's always late. Always seems to take an eternity to get your printing done and ready, but you've dealt with it because there really wasn't another alternative. That is, until now, Max Image Printers. Take the worry out of your printing needs. As a hybrid company, both on website and phone, they welcome clients, businesses of all sizes, to call and ask questions to make as many orders as you need, with the confidence of having your work printed, beautiful, and ready in just a few business days. Bring the trust back into your printing. Maximize your printing experience with Maxim Image Printing. Call now at 801-977-8330. Email Keith at maximage.net. Visit the website, maximage.net. Max Image Printing, quality service, guaranteed. If you're not happy, you don't pay.
On a Cape Cod shore, 16 striped bass fish and a horseshoe crab were found dead, killed by a harmful algal bloom. The town blamed excessive lawn fertilizer for polluting the water. They restricted lawn fertilizing to once a year. The state overruled, mandating five times a year. Though the striped bass died on a Falmouth shore, fertilizer pollution is a national problem, clogging our waterways. If you believe in our rights to clean water and beaches, if you want to stop the killing of fish by excessive fertilizer, please join with us. Make a donation for responsible stewardship. Acting together, we can have clean beaches and more fish. Please visit www.donateforoceans.org. That is www.donate4oceans.org.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
And we're back. Sal G. Andrasa with you here on NBRFM with Tina Stromstead, the owner at Soul's Body. Web address for Tina, authenticmovement-bodysoul.com. And Tina, we're back. You know, Tina, I should remind the audience, was also a trainer in the leadership training program in the Marion Woodman Foundation. And Tina, I know you wanted to tell us more about the foundation and Marion Woodman. So please, would you go ahead and do that?
Sure. Thank you. Marion Woodman was a pioneering Jungian analyst, an acclaimed author, an inspiring international teacher, a wise crone, a mentor of mine for 30 years, and I would say a beloved soul friend. She died recently, July 9th specifically, and at 89, so she lived a long and full life, and a number of us just organized a memorial for her in Santa Barbara at Pacifica Graduate Institute, where she flew down with her husband, Ross, a teacher of the Romantic poets, and taught every winter. So I trained with Marion from the 1980s. I was already a dance movement therapist and a licensed psychotherapist, but when I met her, when she came to teach at the San Francisco Jung Institute, I was incredibly moved by her. And I had already read several of her books. Some of her books, her early books, had to do with eating disorders. One was called The Owl Was a Baker's Daughter, and it came out in 1980, and it described the inner struggle of anorexia, bulimia, obesity, and what she called the repressed feminine. So in those days, if you were struggling with an eating disorder, you might go to a doctor, and he or she would say, I really don't know what's going on. Why don't you try this antidepressant? And it's true that there was often depression that was comorbid, let's say, that was going on at the same time. But what they didn't understand were some of the deeper mechanisms at work that Marion really began to bring out and talk about. And a lot of it had to do with what she and also Jung called the repressed feminine in our culture, which is actually coming up now and finding a voice in things like the Me Too movement and other things. So she talked about Women's Addiction to Perfection. That was another one of her really best-selling books. And it had to do with how women often take in magazine images and notions of thinness and beauty and supporting a very consumerist culture that says you don't pass unless you have this kind of skin or unless you weigh this much or unless you walk like this, dress like this, talk like this. An incredible kind of scrutiny of the feminine and the body that can make it really difficult to value your own inner life, your own sense of feeling, your own sense of authority. And so Marian's work really honors the wisdom and the voice of the body. It honors, it works on developing more of a conscious relationship with the feminine and a sense of spirituality in which the body is also sacred, not the repository of evil like in the early stories, you know, where Eve was considered to be, you know, all body and sexuality and all that had to be repressed by some of the early, you know, church authorities, I think because of a sense of fright about it. She worked a lot with eating disorders and then moved into helping people with alcoholism, with cocaine, with work addiction, with now we have internet addiction. And she was working with the spiritual longing at the root of these addictions. So with food, it was a longing for the mother, for more sweetness. With alcohol, we often call it spirit in the body. It was a longing for spirit. And with cocaine, a longing for light. With sex addiction, a longing to feel a sense of union, however misguided, if there isn't any feeling or love there. And actually, Jung and Bill W., the founder of AA, had a lot of very valuable correspondence of letters back and forth. And that became the foundation of AA and other associations that looked at the value of community and of what the deeper longing was that was trying to be satisfied with some kind of substance or something concrete or a kind of behavior that really didn't address what was underneath. So Marian also worked with dreams and sexuality and the shadow becoming more whole. And we had many, many ways of doing this, not just with talking, but also working with dreams, as I mentioned, with art, with natural breathing, coming onto the natural voice with Anne Skinner, who was the head of voice at the Stratford Shakespeare Company in Canada, with movement, with Mary Hamilton, who had originally been with the Royal Canadian Ballet. And Mary and Anne came to work with Marian and formed a powerfully integrative way of working that a number of us were trained in, and then she asked me and my colleagues, Meg Wilbur and Dorothy Anderson, if we would begin to take the work out once she got a little bit older and they were not anymore working with groups from the very beginning. And then other teams have formed. So people can find out more about that work on my website, tinastromstead.com. Or M, as in Marian, Woodman Foundation.org. There's a lot more to say about it, but I want to let you have a chance to ask a question or reflect in some way,
you know,
if you'd like.
You know, I would, because I'm listening to this, and you know, we could always pick up the discussion about Marian next time.
Okay.
But the thing about this is, as I'm listening, this repressed feelings and these improbable, if not impossible, standards, are they imposed by society? Are they familial? Is it a combination of both? I mean, I'm just trying to understand the root cause of it.
Thank you for that question. I would say both, as you said. So if you think of, you know, that image of Russian nesting dolls, where there's a larger doll and then inside it a slightly smaller one and then a slightly smaller one and then a slightly smaller one. Or you could think of concentric circles, if you will. So maybe we have the larger circle of the world, you know, and of course beyond that we would have the cosmos, the galaxy. We're affected by all those things. Sometimes it becomes more obvious than at other times. But then we have the planet, and we're much more in touch with what's going on around the world now through the internet within moments than we ever were. And then if we keep narrowing it down, we get to a continent, and then a country, and then a state, and a town or a village, and a family, and then a person within a family system. So all of those things have their own influence. And depending on where we've grown up, what religion we grew up in, what ethnic background we hail from, our ancestors, where they come from, and their stories and myths and traditions, and also what Jung called the zeitgeist, the spirit of the times. And all of those notions can have a big impact on how we consider what it means to be a feminine person or a masculine person. And unfortunately, those things have become reified, stereotyped into what it means to be a so-called man, you know, a real man. And we have a lot of that going on right now in a misguided way that turns into force and violence and things like this if there's a sense of shame or misunderstanding about it. And what it means to be a woman, and everyone is different.
Yeah.
And people are exploring, you know, what it means to integrate those things now. So the family gives us big messages.
Right.
Our religion gives us big messages. The culture, the television. And to be able to open to deeper feeling and senses in the body gives you an opportunity to find out what it really means for you.
Yeah.
Not being defined by anybody else, but for you.
Tina, we're running a little short on time. I just would like to sum up in my mind what I'm hearing. We really are our own personal recipes, because we were raised at a place in time by different people and different continents and so forth. Is that oversimplifying?
I don't think so. I think that's a great reframe.
Okay.
Bringing it together. Mm-hmm.
I know you wanted to end today with a poem or a quote. We are running short, so I did want to save some time for that.
Thank you. Well, here's a quote from Dear Marion, to honor her. This is from Marion Woodman. She says, soul, now soul is understood as the vibrancy of spirit in the body, the aliveness of spirit in the body. Soul making is allowing eternal essence to live and experience the outer world through all the senses, seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, so that the soul grows during its time on earth. Soul making is constantly confronting the paradox that an eternal being is dwelling in a temporal body. That's why it suffers. That's why it learns by heart. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina Stromstad, owner at Soul's Body. And Tina, if you would please just review your contact information so the folks know where they could reach you.
Sure. My website is tinastromstad.com. That's the easiest way to find it, TinaStromstad. Thanks so much, Sal.
Thank you, and we look forward to speaking to you again next time, okay?
Thank you.
All right, great. And don't go away. We'll have more right after this.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
So you see, son, good manners are very, very important. Someday, many years from now, when you're a grown-up, you'll be a man. And when you are, you should be a gentleman. Do you want me to go through it one more time?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Exactly. Always say please, thank you, you're welcome, and excuse me. Sit up straight, hold doors open for ladies. If a door's shut, then knock first. Don't burp, don't swear, don't speak with your mouth full, don't reach across people's plates, keep your elbows off the table.
What table?
And don't interrupt. While we're at it, don't stare, don't use foul language, don't call people names, but do remember people's names. Always share your toys, play nice, and cover your mouth when you cough or sneeze. On the bus, give up your seat to anyone who has trouble standing. Bottom line, treat others the way you'd like to be treated. Got it?
Got it.
And stop picking your nose.
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But spending just 2 minutes twice a day making sure they brush their teeth is easier and could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. That's 2min2x.org. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.